Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I want to welcome all of you to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We've got a great show for you this afternoon. One of my favorite guests, Susan Posell, is on the line. Susan, how are you?
I'm very good.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Susan, why don't you tell the listeners about your website and anything else you got going on of importance?
I am the chief editor and publisher for OccupyCorporatism.com. You probably have read my articles. They are reposted all over the internet. You can just Google Suzanne Posell, and you will find that. Hashtag Suzanne Posell is usable. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Restore the Republic, Google+. If you want to keep in contact with me, my email address is OccupyCorporatism@gmail.com, and I don't get to everyone, I apologize, but I do get to most, and even if it's just to let you know that I got the email, and I can't always do everything that's requested of me, I apologize, but I do try to respect if you have any information, make sure that it's evidence-based and corroboratable, because I just don't deal in anything but facts, and I know that that's kind of interesting in some independent media circles, but I believe that what we can prove and who we can tie to the actual incident is how we can make this actually stop. I also have the USIndependent.com, which is the online newspaper to the media publishing house that I started. And the USIndependent.com has about 23 amazing contributors to it right now, and we're always looking for more. So OccupyCorporatism@gmail.com if you want to submit your work to contribute to the US Independent. We're always looking for fresh, new, amazing, wonderful information to share with our audience. So I'm very impressed by Mark, and I think that I can safely say that we're kind of getting to be good friends. And I'm always tickled pink to come on and talk to you.
Well, great. I appreciate that a lot. I think we should have recorded our conversation earlier today. That was quite fascinating.
Well, that was just the practice run.
That was the practice run. So, I mean, we could talk about anything. Don't feel like we have to talk about Sandy Hook and the Boston bombing. But if you want to start there, we can certainly start there. Now, you're kind of the opinion that Sandy Hook may have been a real school shooting, correct?
Well, I'm of the opinion that we don't know. We're not sure.
Okay.
We have interesting theories and interesting pieces of evidence. And I think that this really needs to be investigated further. We need to understand exactly what happened, because as a result of it, we see that they are putting in more controls. I mean, did you see the article I wrote this, and many others did last week, about six California schools who have military weapons because they asked for it and they got it from that 1033 program that everybody loves George Bush Sr. for starting.
Wow. No, when you say military weapons, you mean like what kind of military weapons?
Oh, like some scary new vehicles to transport your children with. An armored vehicle was given, a tactical armored vehicle was given to one school in California. It is worth $733,000.
What?
And for some reason, what? They needed a military tactical vehicle.
A military tactical vehicle. Now, why would a school need that?
Well, let's go back to Sandy Hook.
Okay.
They have been using the Sandy Hook incident and what's her name? Gabrielle Giffords.
Mm-hmm.
It's deplorable what happened to her. But she's on this Michael Bloomberg bandwagon, and I understand that. She has a role to play, and she's a good spokesperson for what she's doing because of what happened to her, and she's believable. But this, what is happening in California, and by the way, that school that ordered the vehicle, they discontinued the order. They gave it back. So
Okay.
It's kind of like, oops, okay, we'll give the toy back. We don't really have it. But the Sandy Hook shooting inspired $5 billion to be spent in securing the safety of our public schools.
Oh, my.
This is an exorbitant amount of money.
Yeah, like we can afford that, right?
Well, yeah. Well, can we? I mean,
of course
we can afford
not.
A lot of things when it doesn't come to our country, but.
Gosh, that is amazing. That is incredible indeed.
Absolutely, it really is. So that is the blowback from Sandy Hook. And that's obvious. We have this huge push. Kevlar backpacks are sold to students, just in case.
I remember
when they outlawed the metal lunch boxes because we could hit ourselves over the head with them or, you know, the other person.
That sounds like more of a real danger than being shot. Kevlar backpacks, that's pretty amazing. So, you
Not
know,
that we
I,
want to scare our kids.
Yeah, really. I have a clip. Remember Gene Rosen? One
no.
of the people. And okay, let me play this clip for you. This is kind of interesting. And this was the first guy that I saw talking about the Sandy Hook shooting. So let's listen to this clip and then we can discuss it. I think that there's a big kind of a quiet gap here at the beginning.
School bus driver picked them up. I think she had just let off some kids or was in the area. And they came inside the house and they start talking about blood coming out of her mouth. And they said, what are we going to do for a teacher? Our teacher's dead. Matt, I mean, they were so distraught. I had all these stuffed animals for my grandson. I brought them all down. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. I can't even imagine this. These children. My grandson is eight. He's 8 years old. They're just starting out. How can anyone do this? How can anyone do this? How can anyone do this? These children in my house were so frightened. Oh my God, they were so frightened. They were children terrorized. They were just so frightened. Some lady came looking for her son. I hope he's not one of the children. She said, I heard you had six kids here. I thought I took him to the firehouse. Her face looked frozen in pain. I've never seen anything like that. Her face looked like it was stone. I said, what is your child's name? And she gave the name. I have to find out about that kid. How could you kill children? How could you kill one child?
When you hear this guy, he sounds a little more convincing than when you actually see him on YouTube, because he's the first guy that I saw, and I thought, well, this guy, he's not even a good actor. But if you just hear the voice, he's a little more convincing, and I wonder if he forgot his lines when he said, I don't know what to say. Now, who knows, but I just really wondered about this particular guy. What are your thoughts, Susan?
Well, if we're discussing entering bits of evidence, then there's a reason why eyewitnesses are not entered in as evidence. Hearsay in a courtroom is meant to emotionally sway juries and the public. That's why media uses a lot of eyewitnesses. It causes you to have an emotional reaction about the event before you even understand the information. And the reason why that is so dangerous is because you've already made up your mind, even though you don't realize it. Because now, once you continue to become inundated with more information about the incident or the event, in your brain, you've already been programmed with that emotion, so that emotion will come back every time you hear about it, every time you see an article about it or a broadcast in the news or even just a mention of it. And so that, to me, that clip is purely what is considered propaganda. It is a person's account of something that they claim that they witnessed, and unless it's corroborated outside of them, to the extent that their version of it matches the other versions of it, and those people, including that person, is validated, that their personhood is validated, that who they are is validated, that they're not some, you know, crazy person making stuff up, that they have a history of doing that, then that information can be taken into serious consideration.
Yeah, who knows with Sandy Hook? Sandy Hook is such a strange mixed bag. I have another very strange clip here of a Sandy Hook student, and he's telling what happened, and in the middle of him talking, he says something to the effect of, well, we got down under the table because there was a drill. He says something to that effect. Let's listen to this.
Second grader Louis, his mom Lindsay, and his grandmother Kathy. Oh, he's in third grade. Thank you, Louis. I asked all the kids what questions they want me to ask, because obviously this is a sensitive topic. So, Louis, you want me to ask you what you remembered from that day?
Yes. I remember that a lot of policemen were in the school. I was like hiding under when we were having a drill. We were hiding under, like,
take your time. There's no hurry. Go ahead. Let me ask you, what would you like to say to your teachers about Friday?
Well, I don't know, but it's like...
Wait, you appreciate your teachers?
Yeah, I appreciate my teachers. and
thank them for helping you.
Thank them for helping me a lot of time and stuff. So
that's fine. That's perfect. Thank you.
Isn't it terrible the way they coach this little kid? You know, tell them this.
That is an extremely important clip, folks. Let me explain something. This is a tactic that is used on television shows. This is a tactic that is used in marketing. This is a tactic that is used by mediums. This is called a pre-interview. Now, what they do is the facilitator or the host or the psychic goes in and asks people what they would like to get out of that thing. Okay? So the medium will say, well, who do you want to speak to today? And then magically during the taped interview, that entity will appear. And this man gave himself away in the beginning because he admitted that he had asked beforehand what this child would like to talk about Sandy Hook. So he already knew what this child was going to talk about. And then when he saw the child stammering, he turned the focus to the child's teacher. Why would he do that? He did that because children traditionally see their teachers not only as an authoritative figure, but as a part of their everyday life, just like their friends and family, because they spend so much time with this person. And especially at such a young age, the teacher is incredibly influential. So to mentally turn the child's attention to imagining that they're talking to their teacher, it might help them get their script out better without stammering and without, you know, going off on whirling dervishes like that child was. As soon as the facilitator saw that the child could not recover his script, he then exited the child out and ended the interview. That is an extremely important piece of information. And you need to understand, people do this to you all the time. In fact, you probably had it done to you several times today and several times more before you go to bed. So you need to be aware of not only this clip, but the tactic that was used in this clip, and study that, because it's almost in like marketing and sales 101.
So that was a marketing technique?
Sure. Sandy Hook has been become the mascot for protecting our youth. We have to get rid of guns. We have to curb access to guns. We have to develop tougher criteria for people who are trying to obtain weapons. We have to curb the type of weapons that people are allowed to purchase. We have to put safety measures in our schools. We have to bring the police departments into our schools. We have to bring off-duty for hire cops or security officers in our schools. There are some states that want the teachers to be armed themselves, and Wayne LaPierre from the NRA proposed that. Obama's children go to a school where there are not only Secret Service there because those kids are there, but there are 11 armed guards. So if it's okay for Obama's kids, it should be okay, I guess, for everybody. But the point is, we need to install police state. Okay, that's the word nobody's talking about. We need to install police state into our indoctrination stations. That's really what the real bottom line agenda is about. It's not about your guns. It's not about your right to your guns. That's just part of the deal. That's like sweetening the deal, right? The icing on the cake. The real agenda is to infiltrate police state all over this country in every facet of it so that it becomes an absolute norm, just like divorce has become a norm, just like going on welfare has become a norm.
So they're getting the kids used to a police state.
Sure, because these children died. They are now mascots. It's unfortunate because these children died. But they are now mascots for, we need to protect our youth. And if it means implementing police state into our schools in order to accomplish that goal, well, then by golly, we're going to have to roll up our sleeves and give away some of our freedoms. But it's for the kids. It's for the kids.
Isn't that interesting? Because, back in pioneer times, the kids probably brought their guns with them to school. You know what I mean? they probably had guns.
No, they really did. That's not a joke. They really did, because on the way home, if they saw a rabbit, they bring that home for dinner, and that's not a joke.
I know. But now suddenly it's just so dangerous. It's just so weird. So they're kind of programming the kids then, and they're programming us too.
The parents, sure.
Yeah.
The children are products of their environment, period. Because they start to look at their environment in their home, and they start to mimic the behaviors that they see at home. And then they take those behaviors and try them out on people in public and people who are not in their immediate family and see if it works. And they tweak it here and there. But the base foundation is what they receive at home. And so if you are fearful of police state and absolutely nervous and scared, then you're going to instill that idea into your child, whether you directly talk to them about it or not. Because children hear everything, trust me. They do. And they pick up on your facial expressions. They pick up on your body language. They pick up on the tone of your voice. There are micro expressions that they pick up on. They are sponging up the example that you're giving to how to respond to your external world and then mimicking that. So whatever your ideology is, whatever your belief system allows you to react or act upon, that is directly being instilled into your child. And then your child is taking that information in and reinterpreting it. Now, an entire generation, like let's take the millennials, who have lived under the blanket of technology for the majority of their life, and have used technology as they are growing up in their formidable years, and now they're in their 20s and early 30s. Now we have a group, a generation that doesn't care that everything is on the internet, that thinks that digital technology is wonderful and cryptocurrency is awesome, and the NSA is spying on us, but on the backside of it, we have all of this cool stuff. So I'm going to go ahead and get the iPhone, 5S, and I'm going to put my thumbprint, my first fingerprint down on there, and who cares? And I'll just get some open source software and block it as much as possible. What we're doing, what has been done to the millennials in technology is being done to our generation in school and Sandy Hook and gun-related violence. It's the same thing.
I think they closed that whole school down, didn't they? That's what I heard.
They did. They decided that it wasn't worth rebuilding and making some changes to it, which is not really that. It's not really that shocking when you think of the location and you think of what it took to facilitate that facility. And if you go back and look at records from, I think it was a year or two before this even happened, they were thinking about shutting down the school anyway.
Hmm. Very interesting. I got another clip here. I'm not sure what to think of this one. And I'm not even sure which one of these shootings this occurred at. But you can hear the person being interviewed briefly mention actors. I'm not sure if we want to take this, make too much out of this, but it's kind of interesting, so I thought I would play it.
This is Dabu 7 with a look at the footage of the Pittsburgh school shooting. And this is the interview given immediately on scene. And this is what this woman slips up and says, that they are out there looking for the actors. I will run it back and forth a couple times. And here we have crisis actors exposed.
We don't know if they came out of the woods, but we do have witnesses that told us the shooters did go back in the woods.
And then did they take off toward a certain area?
Possibly. We're hearing that they possibly took off toward Bell Silver, but that still needs to be confirmed.
And do you know what kind of weapons they had?
I do not.
What's involved with the search now? How is that proceeding?
The search is proceeding right now, and as I stand here, I don't know, but I do know that we do have units out that are looking for actors. I'm looking for actors.
How is that proceeding?
The search is proceeding right now, and as I stand here, I don't know, but I do know that we do have units out that are looking for actors, looking for...
Anyway, that's probably enough of that. I don't know what to think of that. I don't know if we should make too much out of that, but I don't know if actor is a technical term that police use or what, but it makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Well, what is the rest of the quote?
In what context
are we discussing this? I'm not saying anything against the quote at all. I'm just saying, folks, let's hear the rest of it. Let's find out, because obviously she realizes she said so she realizes she's about to say something that she shouldn't say, or searching for a word that she didn't mean to use. No, really, I've been on radio quite some time, and that happens all the time. When you're searching for a word and you say, and you look up at the ceiling, like magically it's going to appear above your head. The rest of her statement would explain what she's actually intending to do, if it's to use chicanery or sleight of hand, or if she accidentally said a word that she didn't mean to say. And I think that it warrants the entire clip before we would even discuss the content of what she said.
I agree. Sandy Hook's weird. We were talking a little bit about the Boston bombing, too. The one thing that seemed really strange about the Boston bombing to me was the guy that was supposedly got his lower leg blown off. And the first thing they do is they, like, put him in a wheelchair, which you think would be silly because you'd probably want to elevate that leg so it didn't completely bleed out. And then he's being pushed in this wheelchair, and his facial expression is fine. It doesn't look like he's in any pain, but he should be writhing in agony, and it's just all surrealistic. And then when you saw the explosions, I don't know if you noticed this, but they were just like white puffs of smoke. They looked like, you know, something you'd see in some kind of low budget film or something. They didn't look like real bombs. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Susan?
Well, first of all, with the explosion, we've seen so many Hollywood films that we think that that's how it really looks, and that's not in real life. I know lots of EMTs, several firefighters, and when they get to a scene, it doesn't look like that. When the building continues to explode into flames, it doesn't look like it does on the movies. So, and then second of all, neither you or I, or most of the people listening to the show, are qualified to make an assessment. We haven't studied explosions. We're not an explosions expert. I would love to get an explosions expert of that incident and have them analyze that. And I don't think that that's asking too much. The calm look on the gentleman's face, if you understand what happens to you chemically when you have an arm or a leg blown off or some severe injury, your body immediately releases chemicals that calm you down. And at that point, you don't feel the pain. And it may not happen instantaneously. It usually takes a few minutes, maybe even up to 10 or 15. But once you hit that pain threshold, and your body releases enough of that chemical, or your brain rather, and it's in your system enough, you won't feel the pain. Because at that point, it's too traumatic. Some people pass out. Some people look the same way that this gentleman looks. So again, and that's a medical issue. So someone who understands and is an expert in the field that I'm discussing loosely would need to come in and assess the look on this man's face.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree with you that his leg should be elevated. I don't see a good enough tourniquet from, and I'm looking at the picture right now, folks. I don't see a good enough tourniquet from any of the pictures that I'm looking at here that would justify putting his leg in that position, because a good enough tourniquet, you could move someone for a short distance in the position that they have him in. So again, I don't know. I wasn't on scene when the EMT strapped him up. I don't know. But again, that is the problem. Unqualified people looking at things and making emotional assessments on it causes a lot of interesting theories and information that may not be applicable. And it's in our nature to do this. When we do not understand something, we come up with an explanation for it. Why do we have winter, Mark? Why do we have winter?
I think we have winter because of the tilt of the Earth's axis, and the light from the sun hits us at an angle during that time of the year.
Well, for many centuries, people believed that the god of the underworld, Hades, stole Persephone, and her mother, Demeter, was so aggrieved and so upset by this that she cried, and that's why we have winter. And the only solace that Demeter has is that every spring, Hades allows Persephone to come back up from the underworld, and so we have spring and summer. That is the mythological explanation for an actual geological occurrence that is happening. But because people at that time did not understand geology and the tilt of the earth and all of the other factors that go in, are involved in truly understanding our world and explaining incidences that occur, they came up with a story, came up with a bunch of characters, and then continued with religious practices and prayers toward that, and a whole belief system based on that, where scientific evidence shows that that story is not possible, it's not true, it's made up. And I think that that is an underlying problem that we have. When we look at evidence from the Boston bombing, when we look at evidence from Sandy Hook, we're not qualified. We may not understand certain factors, not because we're stupid, but because we haven't studied that. We're ignorant of all of the information that's happening. And we don't apply the rules of evidence either when it comes to it. And we also assume that because someone who has what we consider an exorbitant amount of credibility makes a theoretical statement, that that is factually based. And that may not be the case.
So what are your thoughts on the Boston bombing? Do you think it was a real event or some kind of staged event? Not sure. Are you still there? Maybe I lost
my... Oh, I'm sorry. I muted myself out.
I thought maybe something was wrong with my Skype connection.
No, no. We don't have to worry about the NSA censoring me. I censor myself.
Okay. Wow, that was weird.
I was in the middle of answering you, and then I realized you couldn't hear me. So what I was saying was the information that happened before the Boston bombing is very rarely talked about, and it explains a lot about what happened that day. But because of some of the people involved in it, we don't readily talk about this information, and because it's not sensational enough. What's more sensational is the book bags and the Kraft International, which, by the way, folks, if you work for Kraft International and you show up to work in your uniform where people can recognize you and tie you back to it, you need to be fired. Second of all, if you work for Kraft International, you need to change your uniform, because I can go to Target and buy khaki pants for, $15, $20 maybe. And by the way, you sell your Kraft International cap that everybody wore for $23.99. So it's not going to take much for me to show up to any event or anywhere, just sitting around my house looking like a Kraft International employee.
So I've heard that Boston bombing and Sandy Hook were what they call FEMA capstone events, which are actually national drills that are launched all the way from the president. And there's actually a company that exists that controls these kind of drills and puts them on. The name of the company is Obsidian Analysis. OBSIDIAN, Obsidian Analysis, and they hire the crisis actors and everything. I don't know if this is true, but this is what I've heard anyway.
Well, they do work with Homeland Security and National Security and intelligence decision makers. I'm on their website right now.
You're one step ahead.
Well, because I have not heard of this, and so I don't want to comment on something that I don't know about. Are based out of Washington, D.C. They provide professional services, analytical and political consulting for Homeland Security, National Security, and intelligence decision makers. It's quite interesting. Go ahead.
Well, I have a guest who's coming on in a couple of weeks, and I was really kind of amazed that he would come on the show. His name is Robert Steele, and he's like an insider's insider, evidently. And, well, let me play some of this clip, and then we can talk about him a little bit more in the light of some of these things like Sandy Hook and the Boston bombing.
What do you and the other thinkers that you read and see, is there a consensus? Because, I mean, there's a consensus. We see now there's a decline of the whole world, really, except for maybe some areas of Asia, a accelerated moral decline, a police state acceleration, an elite that just thinks they can continue to just buy more armored vehicles, more drones, more NSA spying, more hidden microphones, more Stingray systems, stealing your data, more. I mean, you're talking about how there's no real human intelligence in the CIA, except domestically. My dad just retired, but he and all the doctors where he worked got visited by Homeland Security, and they said, like 2 years ago, we want you to spy on your patients. And they said, what, like terrorists? People that said, no, just, you know, everybody. Tell us what they're thinking. Come to monthly meetings with Homeland Security. We can even get you a little card, and, you know, if you work enough for us, give you some money. They were, like, trying to turn doctors into, like, spy informants. And a lot of them, you know, watch 24 or something, think it's really cool. But most of them knew that it was like going to work for Ceausescu or something. And then you learn about clergy response teams and FBI InfraGuard. And I mean, I personally have to deal with well-known FBI informants, literally. And I'm thinking about doing a report on this. Literally following me around and then letting me know they are. And just doing all sorts of weird stuff just because I'm on air saying I think we should not have warrantless wiretapping. I mean, it's just so crazy to watch this decline.
We can pick back up in that clip in a second. Isn't that kind of bizarre? I guess Homeland Security talking to doctors to saying spy on your patients. Do you think Alex is crazy, or is that really going on?
Well, when it comes to owning a firearm, there are doctors who are, when they're assessing their patients, if it is a mental issue, they do ask if they own a firearm and if they're licensed to do so.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So it's not out of the realm.
Good point.
I wish I could have heard more from Robert Steele.
Okay, let me bring him back on here. We'll hear some more here.
What this is all about is spending money, because Congress gets a 5% kickback, and nobody really cares whether Homeland Security, the NSA, are effective or not. They're not. In fact, almost virtually everything that's happened in the United States has been a false flag event. It has not been a real event, and NSA has not prevented a single terrorist incident, neither has Homeland Security. So the good news is this is really the U.S. government budget out of control, serving special interests and giving Congress a 5% kickback. It's not actually the Orwellian state. It's more of a perversion of the Orwellian state.
So it's like a bunch of country club folks and others just running around with all this high-tech power, and it's basically just a way to continue the gravy train rolling. Because, I mean, sure, the Nazis had a security state, but they were really going around grabbing people and were somewhat organized.
I got to give people credit because, yes, they will assassinate you and they will lock you up without due process. And there are some pretty bad things that are happening, but it's a very, very small, tiny percentage. I remember Madeleine Albright's memoir. She talked about how, as Secretary of State, she was a gerbil on a wheel. So just think of these people as 10 million gerbils on wheels.
Yeah.
You've got an idea of.
Susan, the interesting thing that he said there is that Congress is getting a kickback on some of these deals. I don't understand how that works. Does that ring a bell with you at all?
No, but I do want people to understand that there are CIA agents, current, active, and former, who are put into places where they would have influence in order to discuss and plant information that may or may not be accurate for the purpose of swaying the audience to believe in what they're saying. And by using their credibility, especially if they are of if they are former intelligence, that somehow lends to their credibility in the eye of the listener or the audience, and therefore gives them the unfettered ability to say whatever they want, knowing that the audience won't, or the majority of the audience wouldn't look up to see what if what they're saying is true. And because such a small percentage of the people would do the actual research to corroborate what is being told to them, that lends to the majority of people having an emotional reaction to the information based on their view of that person as an authority figure, and then regurgitate that information unvetted, unevidenced, and then it becomes actual fact. Then the facts don't matter anymore.
You've talked about the lead up to this civil war, and you've mentioned before in some of our conversations about people being put in place to kind of stir up the public. And is that what we're seeing here, you think?
Oh, absolutely. The Council for National Policy. This is the they set the plot line for the Republican Party, from full-blown Republicans all the way down to right-wing conspiracy theorists. They have provided the plot lines and storylines. They have provided the agendas that we need to be concerned about, the people that we need to dislike. They've set up little factions so we can have our grassroots efforts and our demonstrations. And it is amazing to me that a lot of people who work with the Council for National Policy are members of the Council for National Policy, or are not members themselves but work directly with members of the Council for National Policy. They never discuss this, ever.
You know, what I've always wondered about Alex is he's always stirring people up all the time. You know, he's always getting people riled up all the time. And I've always wondered, gosh, you know, you'd think he'd be more focused on trying to educate people and get the message out. But he's always just, like, stirring people up. And that kind of fits into what you've been saying about them trying to get a civil war started in the U.S., them, whoever they are.
When they make a celebrity, or they hire someone to be a spokesperson, or someone who is going to be a mascot, they make sure that they get the right man for the job. So they might try out some people, and you might see someone come up out of nowhere and then, you know, as quickly disappear. But the people who are good at their job, the people who are effectual in the purpose for their employment, are the ones who stay around the longest. And that is why, what's his name? I just forgot his name. Oh, my God.
Alex?
No, the United Nations and the Wolf of Wall Street. He was in that movie, and he was in the Titanic. Leonardo DiCaprio. DiCaprio was chosen by Ban Ki-moon, and Ban Ki-moon said, and this is quoted, and I have the source link in my article about the new climate economic policy that is already being discussed and signed on, by the way, because, you know, nobody's paying attention to it. Unless you really want to know about it, you can go on my website and find out about it. But Leonardo DiCaprio was chosen as the messenger of peace, and Ban Ki-moon said he's the best person for the job because of his global stardom and because this is a global issue, because he has such a large sphere of influence, being such an acclaimed actor. This is the right spokesperson for the job. And he said it. I'm not making this up. And this is how people are chosen. This is how people become the people that they are. You can't get on terrestrial radio on a station that is worth being on because of the amount of volume that they attract, unless you pay for it. You have to pay for the time on NPR, on Fox News. You have to pay them money, $500, $600, $700. On Fox News, if you have $25,000, you can get a show on Fox Network. And you have to pay that $25,000 every month. And you have
every
to hope
month.
That your sponsor every month. So if you have $25,000 sitting around, you could be on Fox Network right now. And at least for 1 month, you could be on there. They don't care about the content, folks. Seriously.
Really?
They care about the money. Yes, I'm not making this up.
So I could be a 9/11 truther on Fox Network if I have the
money.
Sure.
If you've got $25,000, they will put you on their network. A month. Yes, yeah, so you got to come up with the $25,000. No.
Not a year, a month. That's pretty expensive.
A month. Most people can't afford that. And they know that the people who can't afford it, who are doing good work, are never going to get heard by a large enough audience. The thing about it is, if you want a large audience, you have to play their game. Everyone who has a large audience has played the game. The people who are the best players stay the longest. It's just that simple.
Let me play a little more of this clip. We still got some left. Might be some interesting stuff.
1,400 professors of Middle Eastern studies in the United States of America. CIA talks to maybe 14. And those 14 are the ones that are U.S. citizens with secret clearances. Okay, so they're beyond rose-colored glasses. These people are wearing an eye patch, and they have a pinhole on the other eye. They are literally out of touch. Nobody challenges them, and that's the problem. I testified to Senator Patrick Moynihan, God rest his soul, and I testified on secrecy and what secrecy does. Secrecy makes you stupid.
That's right. I want to go to some calls, but let's talk about, and I can't wait to read your book, Open Source Everything, because when it's open source everything, you get the transparency, the truth will emerge very easily, and then there's such a deeper understanding. But exactly, in a national security state, it just lets lies and fraud and laziness grow. They want to make everything secret because they want to cover up all their screw-ups.
They want to make everything secret in part to avoid accountability.
Yeah. And then it's like a new title of nobility, too. It's like, oh, I have a security clearance.
Yeah, well, that's become so devalued now. I mean, unfortunately, a security clearance today does not mean that you're trustworthy. It means that you have accepted slavery.
Wow, that's a heavy statement.
Well, I tell you something. The threats that are being made to my colleagues today, they are being told that if they have a Twitter or if they have a Facebook post or if they are seen anywhere within 3 miles of a journalist, they will lose their security clearance.
They've tried to arrest members of the State Department that publicly at press conferences go talk to Fox News for 5 minutes and give their personal opinion about Kim Jong-un. I mean, it's like, you're way.
Anyway, I thought that was a really interesting interview Alex did with Robert Steele. So, I mean, I guess we have some good guys that are coming out and getting some good information out. And, I hope Alex has good intentions. I'd like to think he does.
Is Robert Steele benefiting from his exposure?
I don't think he's benefiting very much. This book, I talked to him briefly about his book, and he's saying that the publisher basically gets everything associated with this book. So, but I guess he would get, notoriety or whatever. But I guess he lost his job because he came out and started to speak. So, who knows? I mean,
well, Jay Carney left one job for another.
Jay Carney
was the press secretary for the White House, and now he is a expert for CNN. So,
that's pretty obvious when they moved to CNN.
did Robert Steele talk about this before he wrote his book?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I really don't know. Couldn't tell you.
The timing of things and it begets the agenda behind things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would be cautious of people. There, you know, there's a law. And this came to the forefront with the Manson murders, because Charlie Manson wanted to capitalize monetarily by writing a book. Leo Buscaglia had written or co-authored a book, Helter Skelter, and Manson wanted to do the same. And so this came to the forefront. In fact, the Son of Sam wanted to write a book as well. And the reason why they're not allowed is because you're not allowed to profit off of this egregious act that you committed and now you're incarcerated for. And so profiting off of information that you have that would benefit people, well, we have exposed the NSA. Have they shut their doors?
Not yet.
Are they not using the iPhone to spy on us or any of the other things that they use to spy on us? No. So obviously the discussion of this information is not what we need to know in order to make this stop. In fact, what it does is it causes political conversation, which then allows politics and politicians to then give you the answer to your question. This is part of the Hegelian dialectic. So we have a situation that is exposed, and the answer to that is Obama putting, quote, restrictions. You can't see me, but I've got my quote fingers out, restrictions on the NSA. Still, the NSA is doing exactly what they have always done and will continue to do so until they are properly exposed. So as shocking and for emotional entertainment value, absolutely, it causes you to have an emotional reaction. That's the purpose of this information coming out. But is it something that is going to cause the problem to stop? Obviously, the answer is no. So we need to find out what they don't want us to know, because they obviously don't care that we know this. So let's keep digging and find out what they don't want us to know. And then at that point, we could possibly get them to stop.
You know, the one thing that really rings true to me anyway with what you've said before is that these two factions, you talk about these two factions that are in the background that are trying to get the civil war going in the United States. Now, did I misunderstand you? But that's basically what I thought you were, you know, saying in some previous conversations.
Oh, no, absolutely. It is the Council for National Policy. They are behind, should I run down a short version of the list? An extended version of the list is on my website.
Short would probably be good. Otherwise, it'll be at the next hour probably. Go ahead.
Oh, it would be. It would be. Let me give you some of the most shocking names for people who are in evangelical conservative Christian circles.
Explain what this group is again so we have it clear in our head.
Sure. You know that. They were created in 1981, in April of 1981, just after Reagan took office, and that's not a coinkydink. That's not a little factoid. Reverend Tim LaHaye, who has since co-authored the Left Behind series, was the founder of the CNP. Paul Weyrich, who is a co-founder of the Heritage Foundation, Nelson Baker Hunt, son of H.L. Hunt, the oil billionaire, and the Reverend Sungyung Moon, founded, put up the money for and have continuously contributed to the financial continuation of the CNP, the Council for National Policy. When they founded it, they were, quote, seeking to create a Christian conservative alternative to what was the liberalism of the Council on Foreign Relations. So the CNP's enemy is the CFR. That's why the CFR is so bad. We never talk about the CNP because the CFR is so bad. Not that the CFR is not bad. I'm not, you know, by saying what I just said, I didn't say that the CFR is good, okay? The CFR is bad. But they're even worse because they're the enemy of the CNP. So the people who work for, are members of, and work with the CNP include John Ashcroft, former U.S. Attorney General, Gary Bauer, who is from the Family Research Center, Richard DeVos, who is the co-founder of Amway, James Dobson, you may know him, Focus on the Family, Jerry Falwell, televangelist. We also have Edwin Fuelner, who is a co-founder of the Heritage Foundation, Kevin Gentry, who is an activist or lobbyist for the Koch brothers, Koch Industries, and the Koch brothers as well. Both of them are members of the CNP. Larry Klayman, who is the founder of Judicial Watch. Wayne LaPere, who is the spokesman, CEO, and president of the NRA. Pat Mastriciana, who is the producer of the Clinton Chronicles. That's where we get the Clinton body count from. Oliver North. Ralph Reed, former head of the Christian Coalition, Pat Robertson, televangelist, Stanley Monteith, who shows up regularly on alternative media, Jerome Corsi, Orly Tates as well, Jerome Corsi, the head of WND.com or .net, and Paul Craig Roberts. Senator Rand Paul is also a member. Eric Prince, the founder of Blackwater. Pat Buchanan.
Susan, when you read all these names, are you saying that all these people that you've just read, their names, are trying to take this country down?
Yes. Their goal, yes. Larry Pratt. I know. Isn't it amazing? Larry Pratt, who is the head of Gun Owners for America, wrote a book in 2009, and this book was subsequent to other workings he did with General Singlab, who was sent over to create the militias in South America that was funded by H.L. Hunt and the Coors family and Ross Perot in the 80s. Remember the Freedom Fighters? These guys, they got money from philanthropists, Republican philanthropists here in the United States. And that blueprint was then used by the blueprint for creating militia groups out of regular everyday citizens, which General Singlab perfected, was taken back to the United States by Larry Pratt, who spoke about this in 2009 when he put his book out, because his goal was to create a militia here in the United States that would combat, quote, communism. Now, we have manifest a version of what Larry Pratt is talking about, and Larry Pratt is very involved in and friendly with Stuart Rhodes, who is the creator of Oath Keepers. And so their relationship has furthered the creation of Oath Keepers and the creation of militia, and not just Oath Keepers, but other militia that have spun off indirect because of that. So we have what Larry Pratt was talking about in 2009 and this scheme he came up with General Singlab in the 1980s. We have manifested that here today in 2014.
So, again, just to kind of summarize what you're saying in a nutshell is that these very well-known people in the alternative movement, like Rand Paul, Stan Monteith, are actually trying to bring this country down.
Yes.
That is just
What is happening is it's red team, blue team. Now, both the CNP and the CFR work for the same guy, okay? So think of it as a tree trunk. The middle are the guys who control the CNP and the CFR, and call them whatever you want, okay? But on the left side, for the blue team, they have the CFR. On the right side, for the red team, they have the CNP. Now, at some point, they want the CNP and the CFR to actually have a physical fight. What we're calling that is civil war or the second revolution here in the United States. But what that really is the ultimate destruction of our country from the bottom up, from the inside out. That is exactly how the United Nations does everything that they do. Think about this, folks. What is Agenda 21 and how is it being implemented? It's being implemented from the ground up. ICLEI is going into your city council. They're not messing with the federal government. They don't care about the state government. They're going right down to the bottom and changing our cities and towns and our structures without our consent, because city councils are voting for this. That's how you take down a country from the bottom up. The other way that they're doing this is using the emotional fact that we are being screwed over by the bankers, that we are being that our freedoms are being taken away by the police state, that the United Nations, look at this climate change policy, this pomp and circus ceremony that's going down in New York right now. This is ridiculous. But that display in itself is proof that the United Nations is, this is the tactic that they're doing. They're going directly to the people and getting the people to vie for what their agenda is, because they know if they go top down, it doesn't work.
Goodness sakes. I hope everyone that listens to this archive really appreciates the enormity of what you're describing. So somebody has literally planned out the fall of the United States for many, many, many decades.
Yes, but they're using us to do it, and that is the problem. The reason why fear porn and the infotainers and the conspiratainment, the reason why it's so dangerous, I know that's funny.
No, it's great. I mean, the worst fear porn in the world is in exopolitics and UFO research. Go ahead. I'm just getting off on a tangent.
No, the reason why it is so dangerous is because it is what is influencing you. It is what is causing the emotional reaction to get you to change your logical reasoning, you know, your frontal lobe. It's getting you to shut it off and immediately react to situations. And the more that you are encountering that situation, the more likely you are to keep reacting. And therefore, you're a pawn. You're a puppet. You're going to do whatever you feel like you should do because you're afraid. You're scared. You have the right to live. You have the right to have your freedoms. Nobody has the right to take that away. Let's go storm the Bastille.
And they're going to get us to destroy our own country.
Absolutely. Because out of the ashes, mm-hmm. Yes, because out of the ashes, the people who are left, or whatever the situation, when the dust clears, those people will be so mortified by what just happened. Right after the Civil War, people were disgusted. They were just mortified that the country even did that. And they were serious. There was a serious shift in the sociological ideology, the culture of America, where they were like, never, ever again. Same thing happened in the 60s. Everything was great in the 60s until Charlie Manson and the Tate murders. And then they were like, whoa, wait a minute. Not again. LSD is bad. Hippies are bad. We have to return back to conservative modes of thinking because left to our own devices, we are just no good on our own. We need to be told what to do. The same thing is going to happen after, if that occurs. The sociological shift in culture will be, okay, we get upset and we do bad things and we just destroyed and murdered each other and we are not going to do that again. How do we stop that from ever happening? Ah, but that is the bigger Hegelian dialectic happening. And trust me, somebody will stand up to a podium somewhere metaphorically and give you the answer that you were looking for.
Susan, we've gone an hour already. It's just been so fascinating. I appreciate you coming on. Why don't you tell the listeners about your website again and anything else that you got going on?
My website is OccupyCorporatism.com and TheUSIndependent.com, and that's about it. That's a lot.
Well, you're doing great work, Susan. I appreciate it, and I'll contact you on Skype right after the show here. Thanks for coming on. Great job.
Thank you.
Folks, you're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We'll talk to you real soon.